Laura Kanoy here. Thanks for listening to The Exchange. You'll hear several viewpoints and many interesting questions in this hour from people all over the state. There's no other place in New Hampshire where such a broad array of Granite Staters chime in and foster such a robust exchange of ideas. And as important as you are to the depth of the conversation, you also play a pivotal role in NHPR's finances. We're radio for New Hampshire by New Hampshire. Please click the support button at the top of the page at nhpr.org.
It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Granite Staters from the four corners of New Hampshire will soon have a chance to weigh in on Governor Hassan's proposed budget. On Monday, members of the House Finance Committee will hold regional hearings in the North Country town of Whitefield and the southern gate city of Nashua. Then a week later, they'll hit the east to west tips with a meeting in Rochester and the western border city of Claremont. The committee began its work in Concord this week, and it heard plenty from the public. And Hassan's proposed $11 billion budget was the overarching theme behind many a statehouse debate this week, from whether New Hampshire should expand gambling to arguments over raising both the cigarette and gas taxes. Meanwhile, the governor has two nominees in the running for heading two major departments. And outside the statehouse, the city of Manchester this week remembered an icon of business and philanthropy with the death of May Gruber. Today on The Exchange, it's a reporter roundtable, and we'll look into these stories and more. We want your thoughts, too, your questions and comments of the news of the past week. 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests with us in studio: Josh Rogers, NHPR Statehouse reporter and senior political reporter and editor here at NHPR. Josh, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Dean, welcome. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Dan Tuohy, Associate Regional Editor for Patch.com in New Hampshire. And Dan, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And I want to start with you gentlemen about the budget. Boy, it was everywhere this week. The House Finance Committee took the lead, holding, as I said, hearings at the State House in Concord. But Josh, they're going to hit the road next week and hit literally the north, south, east, and west. What happens, Josh, at these regional hearings that House Finance members are holding?
Well, the main thing that happens is that the public gets to weigh in. Constituent groups affected by policy changes contemplated in the budget tend to show out in force, and lawmakers get a chance to, you know, take the temperature of what the public thinks about Governor Hassan's proposal. I mean, they've already been looking at it themselves, but this will, sort of set the table in terms of the public's input.
And do these hearings, Josh, ever change the shape of the budget? Is it more about just listening to the public input on it, or is it more about selling it to the public? What's really happening at these hearings?
Well, I think it's mostly listening. I mean, certainly, these are elected officials. They take note of what the public says, but this is mainly giving the public a chance to weigh in whether or not the input is decisive. In this early stage of the game, it's hard to say. Most of the real serious scrutiny of the line items comes at the State House in hearings, later on in smaller subcommittee groups.
And there was a hearing on the budget this week, Dan Tuohy, and what was some of the input at that budget hearing this week at the State House?
Just as Josh mentioned, I mean, everyone comes out. I mean, it's a very diverse group of people comes out talking about social welfare programs. You name it. There's one woman from the Council of Churches that talked about the gambling, casino gambling bill, and why it should not happen. And the same thing with the public hearings that could happen on Monday, the 11th, in Whitefield and Nashua. I'll be at the one in Nashua. And you're going to hear a little bit of everything, yeah. including the gas tax, yay or nay. And it's really, from the state's point of view, it's transparency in government, trying to let the public know exactly what's in this budget and what's not in it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the quote from the Council of Churches. I've got that right here. I want to credit the Concord Monitor for putting this in front of my eyes. This was from the Reverend Linda Leah Snyder. She said, "We believe the proper role of government is to maintain order, to preserve justice, and to promote the common good. Relying on a source of revenue which degrades our state in so many ways and exploits the most vulnerable members of our society is contrary to this principle." She's talking about gambling there. And Dean Spiliotis, as we talk about the budget, seems to me that gambling is kind of the overarching political touch point there.
Absolutely. As I talk to friends and colleagues around the country in recent weeks and they ask me what's going on in New Hampshire politics, I basically say gas and casinos. And I think what we're seeing is the realization that this proposal for a single high-end casino in the southern tier, down at the Rockingham Park, with an $80 million licensing fee and I think 30% tax on earnings, how essential this is to the Hassan budget, that so much really revolves now around her ability to get this casino proposal through. And the odds look pretty good at this point. The other aspect of it is this gas tax and whether or not we're going to see a rise in the gas tax. It passed the House. It looks like it's going to pass the House. The House committees have passed it. Senate's going to be a much tougher sell where Republicans still control. I believe the Majority Leader Jeb Bradley said that a gas tax would be dead on arrival. So you have these sort of two key revenue sources that are really driving, I think, all of the budget. And it's really what will or will not give Hassan, Governor Hassan, leverage in getting the budget through, or basically telling different legislators, you know, give me the casino and we'll have more money for mental health or for transportation or for education. We kind of knew this during the campaign, but we're really now seeing just how critical these two components, the gas tax and the casino license, are to her having a successful budget cycle.
Well, let's take the casino first, since that's really the biggie, $80 million. Yes. Tricky politics for some Democrats, Dean, who support one half of her agenda, but really find gambling distasteful, especially in the House.
Right, and particularly in the House. And as we know, the casino issue does not cleanly cut down party lines in the state legislature. And I think Hassan has done something that, from kind of a tactical perspective, is fairly smart. And it's to say, okay, you may not necessarily want a casino, or other under circumstances, you may not support a casino, this being Democrats in the House. But if you give me the casino, I'll give you more money for mental health. I'll give you more money for education. I'll give you more money for the things that you really need. She's been very clear about that. I think that the Concord Monitor had an editorial recently kind of decrying that strategy. I think, you know, whatever the sort of the morality of it is, I think it's smart politics. It's probably her best chance for getting that license.
Our phone number here on the exchange for you to join our reporter roundtable today is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Join us as we catch up on some of the news of the week, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Josh, there were preliminary votes in the House and Senate this week on gambling. What happened?
Well, not surprisingly, the Senate proposal that Governor Hassan is backing cleared Senate Ways and Means Committee easily. There wasn't even any discussion. It was a 4-1 vote, the lone dissenting vote being Ways and Means Chairman Bob O'Dell, who's long opposed gambling. And in the House, there were also two gambling proposals, and both of those were voted down in the House Ways and Means Committee. 12-6. So the recommendation out of the House will be not to pass those. That committee was lukewarm at best is not surprising, but there were some who thought that the House might retain one of those bills in committee so as to, you know, at least have what they refer to as a vehicle to essentially pursue a gambling if it seems wise to, you know, have their own proposal should it come to pass. Some people see that as an indication that the Senate bill is going to have a tough go in the House. I think that that's a fair reading on the situation. You know, we'll see. Dean is right in the sense that Governor Hassan is dangling the revenue out there and saying, you know, Democrats in the House, you want to spend more money. This is how to do it. But there are indications, you know, from House budget writers. Mary Jane Wallner, the chair of Finance Committee, said that she's not going to include the $80 million in the budget because it would be imprudent to do so. And you know, you look at some of the action in the Ways and Means Committee, the trimming of the tobacco tax. There's a tobacco tax bill that was for the 30-cent increase supported by Governor Hassan. That's been trimmed back in committee to 20 cents. So, you know, we're a long ways from the end of the budget, and there are a lot of moving parts. And one thing you can say about Governor Hassan that's certainly different from Governor Lynch is that she's not afraid to put, you know, bold proposals on the table and potentially fall on her face. She did that somewhat as majority leader. You can remember the rate-setting bill for healthcare that she put out there that was gutted. So she's less afraid, at least based on her history, of doing something that may not come to pass. And, you know, it's a long ways from knowing whether a casino is going to come to pass. But she's been firm that she wants one casino on the border. And she's also been firm when asked about Plan B that, you know, she's not talking about one at this point.
Well, another question that came up a lot this week. And Dan Tuohy, I'll throw this to you. It seems like both sides of this gambling debate are using the recent update of a study put out by the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies on the impacts of gambling, the overall financial impact, weighing the money that might come in versus the money we'd have to spend on social costs related to gambling. How is that, Dan, that both sides of this debate can use the same study to promote their own point of view?
It's classic politics, Laura. It's amazing. You're right. They both jumped on it, and especially Governor Hassan was very quick to say, look, this supports my what I've been saying all along. This will provide jobs, create a number of jobs in southern New Hampshire, help the economy out statewide and the revenues. And, of course, the people, the critics like Jim Rubens from NoSlots.com are saying, look, this is the social ills are here. And, again, in Maggie Hassan's budget address, she said, look, the social ills are already here. People are already gambling at Foxwoods. Anywhere else. My one takeaway from what Josh was mentioning about the big vote in Senate Ways and Means on gambling was Senate Finance Chairman Chuck Morse told me that, you know, well, look, we got a supporter of gambling. Look, we got a long, long way to go here.
June's a long way away.
Exactly.
And that's when the budget is
due.
But
he did say as well that, you know, four companies have already contacted the State Lottery Commission saying, hey, I want to more info on this.
So there is some interest there.
Yes.
All right, let's take some calls, all of you. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Mike is up first from Raymond. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Morning.
What I want to say is that as far as the governor proposing $80 million is going to come from a gambling license and will create all these new jobs, first of all, our state has about a 5.8% unemployment, which is far less than the national average. So this is it's ridiculous on its face. We don't need gambling jobs. What we need is our better quality jobs, not people working in a casino. Second thing is to close the budget gap with $80 million from a license from gambling from one source. When you invest, you diversify so that if one source falls through, you don't destroy everything else. And in Raymond, for example, the school budget's $21 million for a little over 1,400 students. That is a ridiculous amount of money that we pay for education. And if the money followed the child, for example, and I was able to educate my children in private schools for less than what it costs in the public school.
Okay, and Mike, I'm going to let you go because I want to stick to this casino theme that we're talking about. And gentlemen, maybe right after the break, we'll talk about Mike's point that, you know, why isn't she getting revenue from a broad array of sources? Why relying so much on this one source? So, Mike, thank you very much for calling. And we'll take more of your calls after a short break. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We're going to check in just quickly now with our March fund drive.
And hearing the exchange is one of the reasons you value NHPR. Help us keep the exchange coming your way by giving to NHPR now during the March fund drive. You can do that online at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477. Good morning. I'm Sarah Ashworth. Along with me is Rebecca Lavoie. We're asking you to pick up the phone or go online to nhpr.org.
But do make your contribution right now, because when you do, you have two chances to win an iPad. We are giving away two iPads and two drawings. You can only get in on two chances, though, if you make your contribution by 10 a.m. That is 41 minutes from now, and you will be in both drawings. Please support NHPR and The Exchange and all the programs you love right now. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And here's what we're trying to do. We have $6,000 to raise in the next 40 minutes to stay on track this hour. By calling 1-888-805-6477 now, you help us pay for The Exchange. We know you're listening. We know you value Laura Kanoy and all of her guests every day, coming to you live at 9 in the morning. You can make an online contribution right now to count towards this goal at nhpr.org. Help us get to $6,000 by the top of the hour. It's easy, and it truly makes a difference. Give us a call at 1-888-805-6477.
It is now $5,800 left to go in the next 40 minutes. Listening to The Exchange, you hear all kinds of things. Things that make you think, things that make you laugh, sometimes things that probably make you pretty mad. But The Exchange is a chance to vent. It's a chance to have your two cents heard. It's a chance to join the statewide conversation. That is why you love it. So guess what? You should support it. 1-888-805-6477. NPR77 or NHPR.org.
And you have another chance right now, or I should say two chances right now. You only have two chances until the top of the hour at 10 o'clock, though. When you make your contribution right now, you get two chances to win an iPad. We have two 16-gig Wi-Fi models ready to give away today. When you make your NHPR contribution by 10 this morning, you're in both drawings, but you have to do it by 10 o'clock. If you don't do it by 10, you'll only be in one drawing for the rest of the day. So now is the time to make your pledge. Go online to NHPR.org, or you can give us a call at 1-888-805-6477.
$5,400 left to raise in the next 39 minutes. You can make a dent in that and get a great thank you gift with your $75 gift. For that, we have a brand new, totally awesome NHPR/wait-wait-don't-tell-me mug. It's actually one of those white paper cup-looking mugs. It's not really a cup, though. It's actually a mug, and it's got two incredibly snazzy logos on it, the wait-wait-don't-tell-me logo and the NHPR logo. Can you imagine a better way to show that you love this show and this station? That's $75 at 1-888-805-6477 or NHPR.org.
It is always so exciting when we have a new premium during a drive, a new way that you can show your support for NHPR. And remember that the gap between your listener support and federal support is big, and it's not going to get any smaller anytime soon. So that's where you come in. Your financial support added with all the other NHPR listeners out there is how we pay the bills. It sounds pretty risky, but we don't think so. We trust you to pitch in a few dollars to pay for the news you listen to pay for this program of The Exchange that you rely on for New Hampshire news every day. Call and make your pledge of support right now. You can do that by calling 1-888-805-6477. It takes just a couple of minutes, or hop online to NHPR.org.
But do it right now. You have just 38 minutes left, so you'll have two chances to win an iPad. We are having two drawings, and you get into both of those drawings if you call in the next 38 minutes. This is two 16-gig Wi-Fi model iPads we're giving away. One of those could be yours, but only if you give us a call right now. 1-888-805-6477 or NHPR.org.
And the best way to give to NHPR is by joining our Sustainer program. As a monthly Sustainer, you give $10, $15, maybe $20 a month on your credit card or through your checking account. That adds up to significant support for your favorite programs like The Exchange, like The Diane Rehm Show, like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And it's very affordable because you pay just a little bit every month and you set the rate. And it helps us out so much to know what we can count on from you during this March fund drive. Give us a call at 1-888-805-6477.
We have just 37 minutes left to raise $5,300. It is so critical for us to meet these goals, to stay on track in this March drive. Help us get there. 1-888-805-6477 or NHPR.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members during NHPR's March Fund Drive, and we also receive support from Hinckley Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England, online at haslaw.com. And from Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Specialist, now at the Center for Cancer Care at Exeter Hospital, exeterhospital.com/cancer. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a reporter roundtable on State House politics. We're catching up on all the latest news from the State House this week, and we invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. With me in studio, Josh Rogers, NHPR senior political reporter and editor, Dan Tuohy, associate regional editor for Patch.com, and Dean Spiliota, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And Josh Rogers, just before the break, Mike called from Raymond, and he was criticizing Governor Hassan for, as he put it, trying to close the budget gap from just one big source of revenue, that source again being $80 million in license fees from a casino that doesn't exist yet. What do you think about Mike's comment?
Well, I think it's worth noting that the budget governor hasn't proposed is about $11 billion. And while $80 million is no small chunk of money, it's not humongous within the context of such a budget. You may recall when a few years ago when Governor Lynch and Democrats got behind closing a budget gap with $110 million from the Joint Underwriting Association Fund, Medical Malpractice Fund. That was ultimately blocked by the courts, and they managed to massage the numbers around. So, you know, everything, you know, proceeded without a huge crisis. And $80 million is $80 million. It's a big part of Governor Hassan's plan. It may exist in a seemingly outsized role because of the scrutiny of gambling and also because she's unwilling to talk about other plans. She ran on gambling and she took the pledge and she said she would be open to increasing the cigarette tax, which she's proposing. But other than that, she made it pretty clear that those were the revenue sources that she'd be comfortable with. She's sticking to her guns for now.
Yeah, so not the first time that a governor, Dean Spiliotis, has relied on one big, certain, not necessarily going to get it source of money. Josh reminds us about the Joint Underwriting Association a couple years back.
Absolutely. The other thing to keep in mind is, yes, it is an $80 million one-time licensing fee, but there's also going to be a 30% tax on earnings, and that will be ongoing. So that's an ongoing source of revenue. And, you know, Mike's point about the jobs not being quality jobs, you know, they're not just the casino jobs. There are other kinds of service jobs that are very popular. There's construction. And to the extent you have people staying in the area, you're going to have rooms and meals tax, which is an additional source of revenue. I think it's 9%. So, you know, it's not a panacea for the whole budget, but it certainly is kind of one more opportunity. As we were discussing, there aren't a lot of revenue vehicles that she can rely on. And so you want to maximize what you can get.
Mel and Mike, I appreciate the call. And here's an email following up on what you said. This is from Christopher in Manchester. He says, am I right to notice that Speaker Norelli seems to be caving in on gambling? Her posturing and comments seem to be less anti-gambling than throughout past years. Christopher, thanks for the email. What do you think, Dan Tuohy?
Well, she has opposed expanded gambling in the past. This time around, she said she's open to considering it. I think you have a speaker where she's being a diplomat. She's really, you can tell also that from the get-go this session, you could tell she was a former speaker. She came in really running a tight ship right from her House Majority Leader, Steve Shirtless of Concord. Really, they've been picking their battles as wisely as possible because we have another 3 months to go until the fiscal year ends and a new one begins.
Okay, and speaking of fiscal battles, Dan, I'm going to throw this at you too, since you mentioned it. There was a big dust-up in the House over the gas tax this week. Representative David Campbell, Democrat from Nashua, has been the one promoting a 15-cent increase implemented over a couple years. You might expect any tax increase to be controversial, but Dan, it seems like this one has been more controversial than perhaps it needed to be because of something Campbell said.
Yeah, exactly. He did have some comments. I mean, he won the battle this week with a very strong vote in favor of the 15-cent gas tax increase over 4 years. It was an email to some of his colleagues saying, referring to this increase in revenue as the gift that keeps giving. And he's since apologized right away, but that stuck to some of his opponents. One of the notable opponents, of course, was the former Speaker, Bill O'Brien from Mount Vernon. He had, as an emerging opposition leader, he's not in a GOP leadership in the House, but he's certainly a very visible, vocal opponent.
Yeah, and I want to ask Dean about that in just a second. But Josh, more on the gas tax. There was also a comment, don't spend it all in one place.
Well,
what was Representative Campbell talking about?
I mean, this was an email to members of the Finance Committee. And what he was talking about was, technically speaking, the gas tax is a road toll. And the money is supposed to go to highway-related purposes. So if you are charged a gas tax for filling up your boat, your lawnmower, agriculture equipment that doesn't use roads, technically speaking, you can seek a refund from that gas tax.
Because it's
so
a user fee.
It's a user fee. So he was indicating that the increased tax would fatten the refundable money, but since not many people collect it, there'd be a couple million dollars left over, which lawmakers could spend for other purposes. Fish and Game has historically received some programs in the Department of Safety. So that's what he was talking about. It was sort of universally agreed around the State House that the email was ill-advised. And to Dan's point, talking about former Speaker O'Brien, he introduced a floor amendment, which failed, which would dedicate all gas tax money to explicit roads and bridges, not pay for state police, for instance. And, you know, O'Brien is acting. I mean, he's been pretty open about this, that he wants to enforce purity within Republican ranks. And he had, you know, his amendment and then the pressure he put on Forrest to vote. And while it was a reasonably strong vote, you know, it came out of committee 18-0 in support, but on the floor
of the gas tax.
Yeah, on the floor, 15 Republicans supported it. Two who are actually in leadership and 10 Democrats voted against it, including several Democratic leaders. This bill now goes to the House Ways and Means Committee. There are some who believe that this is likely to be trimmed back, and so we may see a less ambitious gas tax proposal emerge from there, which would then be voted on again by the full House. So what ends up going to the Senate, where, you know, the top budget writer there, Senator Moore, said this is dead on arrival. He wants to pay for roads with casino. So the push and pull over casino versus gas tax is one that is going to continue.
Wow. And what about former Speaker O'Brien, Dean? He spoke out, as Dan and Josh said, quite forcefully against this, warned Republicans who vote for a gas tax increase that there would be a political price to pay next election. It's not the first time lately that the former speaker has been outspoken.
Right. He doesn't seem to be at all deterred by no longer officially being in the House leadership, either in the majority or the minority. You know, for me, this kind of mirrors the sort of larger fissures in the Republican Party that we see both locally and nationally between movement conservatives and kind of the Tea Party crowd, and then kind of more establishment Republicans who kind of want to work in a more bipartisan fashion. You know, basically his option now that he's no longer in the leadership and can't push policy quite in the same way that he once did is to really go to the second strategy, which is the ballot box, right? And to say that they're going to hold, you know, either through primaries on the right or through other types of grassroots, hold Republicans accountable. And, you know, this is the ongoing story within the Republican Party. It has been since 2008 or even earlier, since the big losses to Democrats in 06 and 08. So I don't see that changing anytime soon. He's certainly going to be an effective spokesperson for that particular caucus of conservatives in the state House. And it'll be interesting to watch the tension with the House leadership. I thought that the amendment, I think a lot of people don't realize that the gas tax also goes to public safety and state troopers and other areas, not just bridges and roads. And I thought that was kind of an interesting strategy to say, okay, if this gas tax really is for bridges and roads, let's just use it for that only.
Well, it was particularly interesting given that the budget that, you know, he celebrates passing as speaker also diverted money in his terminology to these other purposes. I mean, and, you know, he says enough is enough. And I also thought it was a very interesting when he said on the floor, it's wrong for Democratic leaders to ask you, fellow members of the House, to engage in kamikaze legislating, referring to bills that are destined to die in the Senate and will also potentially exact a toll at the ballot box. You know, there are those who would say that, you know, he's speaking from experience after the last election.
Exactly. Well, one last thing on this gas tax. You know, we've been talking a little bit about how it's created waves in the Republican Party. But Dan Tuohy, our colleague Kevin Landrigan in the Telegraph of Nashua, wrote that this gas tax increase could be radioactive for Democrats as well. What do you think?
It certainly could. I've been covering this all week and all month because it's such an issue that resonates with people. Everyone, if you drive a vehicle, you're seeing it at the pump, $3.69 a gallon for regular. Forget about it. People know it. They feel it in their pocketbook every week. So that's why people are one way or the other on this issue. But also, David Campbell and supporters came out with spreadsheets this week that pointed out what each town and city would get for revenue. Was also, we've seen this before with the education property tax and everything else. There's so many spreadsheets in Concord on any given year. But if you're a rep for a small town that really needs some roads and bridges fixed, it sweetens the pot a little.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're taking your calls and questions and comments on the news of the week at this reporter roundtable today in The Exchange. The number for you to join us with your questions and comments is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. One more time, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And guys, since we're talking about taxes, let's talk about one more. And Josh Rogers, that's the cigarette tax. You mentioned it earlier. The governor in her budget wanted to raise it by 30 cents. Looks like now they're talking about 20 cents. How come?
Well, it's a question about whether or not, you know, the public will tolerate it or whether or not that might eat into cross-border sales. That's always the question when it comes to the cigarette tax. You know, recall that the tax was decreased under the past legislature 10 cents with a sunset provision. If revenues didn't meet targets, they're not going to meet targets. So we're going to be back to the existing tax. You know, Hassan wanted to tack on another 20 cents
for a total of 30.
Total of 30. It looks like, you know, at least the House Ways and Means Committee is comfortable adding 10 onto what was the old tax. And so that's where it seems to be standing for the moment. But again, this is going to be a debate that's going to be ongoing. And we don't know yet. The budget season has just begun. You know, where the push and pull is going to be, and the cigarette tax is certainly going to be part of that discussion throughout.
Dean.
Yeah, you know, the argument is that even with the increased cigarette tax, cigarettes will still be cheaper here than a little bit cheaper than Maine and a lot cheaper than Massachusetts. So that's how she handles the revenue loss argument. But there's an interesting political argument here as well, because, you know, cigarette tax is an example of something that affects a very specific constituency within the state. Not typically a constituency that's going to have a great deal of leverage on her at the ballot box. You kind of squeeze the revenue where you can get it. And it's one area where, because of sort of changing attitudes about cigarette smoking, she can do it with a sort of with kind of an impunity that you can't do with something like a gas tax, where it's affecting
people
everybody. Much more widely. Absolutely. This is sort of a targeted she can target this. It's not going to have a huge impact for her electorally in comparison to something like a gas tax, which, as Dan said, I think potentially can be problematic.
Well, I mean, well, so you look, I mean, just one more comment on the gas tax. I mean, in total, we're talking the gas tax would raise close to $1 billion over 10 years. And critics of this are already branding it as the largest tax increase in New Hampshire history. You know, people who are going to be supportive of this, you know, can expect to see that on mailers against them, you know, come the next election.
You mean so, lawmakers who
yes,
support the gas
who support
tax
the
increase.
Gas tax. And so that is one dynamic that may lead to this being trimmed a bit. And I do think Dean is right on the tobacco tax. Certainly this was something that Governor Lynch was successful in raising serially. But, you know, I think that, you know, after the past few sort of whipsaw wave elections that we've had, you know, people are sensitive to doing something that's perceived as too dramatic.
Yeah, well, but you mentioned Governor Lynch didn't have any trouble getting increased cigarette taxes. How come Governor Hassan's having a little trouble, more trouble getting that 30 cents?
Well, you know, it remains to be seen how much trouble she ultimately has. But I mean, 30 cents is a fairly large increase to do all at once.
All right. And one more question on the cigarette tax. Excuse me, Dan Toohey. How does the Senate feel about cigarette taxes? As I remember, when the House cut cigarette taxes 2 years ago, the Senate was a little squeamish.
Well, we'll figure out. The Republicans with Peter Bragdon hold a 13-11 edge in the Senate still. I think they're going to try to hold the line, whether it's a gasoline tax or user fee or a cigarette tobacco taxes. They really – people relate it, turn it back around to what does this mean for businesses, for families, and, you know, the Republican majority in the caucus, of course. They're really anti-tax at this point.
Even cigarette taxes, which the Senate Republicans didn't seem to have too much of a problem with. Before.
We'll see.
Yeah.
This is a brand new session.
Our phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. We're taking your questions and comments this hour, but some of the big news coming out of the State House this week. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, I want to pause here for just a minute and check in very quickly with our March Fund Drive.
And you want news you can trust, so you listen to NHPR and The Exchange. You want to learn new things about the world, about politics, science, and culture, so you listen to NHPR. We bring it all to you through the generosity of our listener contributors. Good morning. I'm Sarah Ashworth, and it's our March Fund Drive. Please give now by calling 1-888-805-6477 or go online to nhpr.org. Here with me this morning is Rebecca Lavoie.
It is pretty important that you give right now, that you give in the next 21 minutes. That is the amount of time you have left to get into two drawings to win an iPad. We're giving away two 16-gig Wi-Fi iPads. You have to make your contribution. Go onto our site. Make a call by 10 a.m. to get those two chances. So please support The Exchange. Support NHPR. Support the news you value by giving right now. 1-888-888. 805-6477 or nhpr.org.
So we have $3,900 left to raise with 20 minutes to go until the top of the hour at 10 o'clock. These hourly goals are so important. They help us stay on track to meet the overall goal for this membership drive. You can help us do that. Please become a member by calling 1-888-805-6477. Help us get to that goal at the top of the hour. Go online to nhpr.org.
Wow, there's just $3,500 now left to go in the next 20 minutes. Think about how often you tune in to NHPR, maybe 10, 12, or 14 times a week. That's 500 to 700 hours a year. $60 or $120 is all it takes to become a brand new member, probably a lot less than you spend on downloading songs from iTunes or maybe your Spotify account every month. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call or nhpr.org.
And now is the time to do it. When you make your contribution right now, you get two chances to win an iPad. We have two 16-gig Wi-Fi models here. They're ready to give away, and they could be yours if you make your NHPR contribution by 10 o'clock. If you wait past 10 o'clock, you'll only be entered in one of those contests later today. So now is the time to do it, and you get to help support the exchange and let us know why that program is so valuable and important to you. Make your pledge right now. Call 1-888-805-6477 or go online to nhpr.org.
Maybe you gave during our last pledge drive? Well, thank you. But guess what? We spent it. We spent it covering the economy. We are spending it right now bringing you the exchange. We spent it taking you around the world and around the state. Your gift right now helps us continue to bring you news and programming that you value. So make another gift, even if you have given in the past. Please give us a call. 1-888-805-6477. Or go online to nhpr.org.
We all know how fast money goes. We know how quickly your paycheck goes. It's easy to drop, say, $100 on a Friday night. Maybe tonight that's your plan. A really nice night out could approach $200 or more. That gets you maybe a great meal, maybe a movie. For a comparable amount, you can help sustain the exchange here on NHPR. And think of the value that you will get all year long for an hour every weekday on the exchange. It's something that's going to give you enjoyment every day. When you think of it that way, giving to NHPR could be seen as a really great bargain, and you can help support the program right now by calling 1-888-805-6477 or go online, do it even faster at nhpr.org.
And there is no better time than now. There are just 18 minutes left to get two chances. We're doing two drawings to win on iPad, and you only get in both of those drawings if you give us a call in the next 18 minutes. That's not a whole lot of time. I would hate to have you miss out on two chances to win an iPad. So do it right now. Don't worry about the next 17 minutes. Take this minute. 1-888-805-6477 or go online to nhpr.org.
That's exactly right. Make the next 2 minutes the most productive 2 minutes of your entire day. Kick off your weekend right. Make an ongoing contribution to NHPR. We don't need a whole lot of information. And in just 2 minutes, you can help create thousands of news reports from around the country and around the world. You can help support Laura Kanoy and all of her producers on the exchange. All it takes is $60 or $120 to support your listening. Do it now at nhpr.org.
We have just 16 minutes to stay on track in this drive. We need to raise $3,200 in the next 16 minutes to stay on track. Please help us get there. You can do your part, and in that same amount of time, you can get in on two drawings to win an iPad. When it turns 10 o'clock, you're not going to be in on two drawings anymore. So give us a call right now. 1-888-805-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, during NHPR's March Fund Drive. And support also comes to us from Clark Mortensen, personalized home and auto insurance with 24/7 claim service and online account access, online at clarkmortensen.com. And from Your Home, Your World in downtown Concord, featuring eco-friendly home decor and products for your home. Open Tuesdays through Saturdays until store closing on March 30th. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, we talk with the state's Health and Human Services Commissioner, Nick Tumpas. You can email us your questions for Commissioner Tumpas before the program at nhpr.org, and then join us Monday morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, it's a reporter roundtable. We're sitting down with some New Hampshire journalists and political analysts talking about all the goings-on this week at the State House. It's been a busy week, as we're hearing. The number for you to join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Dan Toohey, we talked a lot about the gas tax in our last segment. There's another source of road funding that's also being discussed too, though, Dan. So give us an update on that, please.
Yes, it's Senate Bill 3. And I flagged this myself because one of the sponsors is Senate President Peter Bragdon. And as introduced, it would eliminate three toll booths on the F.E. Everett Turnpike in Merrimack. The big news this week was the committee approved an amended version which would remove one of those exit toll booths. The bill, as introduced, for three toll booths would impact the Turnpike Fund by, I think, $2.4 million in FY 2014. So approximately $800,000 with that one toll booth, and they may, if they actually physically remove the toll booth, incur some additional expenses. But it's a big issue for anyone who drives the FE Everett Turnpike. And Laura, the turnpike system in New Hampshire has, you know, it's F.E. Everett Turnpike, you know, from Bedford and hooks it down to the border.
So it affects a lot of people.
Exactly. And if, you know, people drive that and you live that way and you work that way and you're constantly paying those tolls, it's a perennial issue and concern over there. Democrats and Republicans alike want to do something to help out the commuters over there.
Yeah, people who live in that area have said, hey, I'm paying a lot more than most folks. But what are the chances, do you think, overall? I know it's early in the process. What are the chances, Dan, that they'll get rid of at least one of those?
I don't know. It looks good when you have the Senate president on your bill. I think he's a very smart guy, and he does well in the Senate chamber. So I think it's going to easily pass the Senate. In the House, we'll see. It's one toll booth, like I said, estimated, you know, less than $1 million, possibly impact, net impact to the Turnpike Fund. So we will find out soon.
Again, our number here in The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And, gentlemen, let's take another call. This is Kristen in Dunbarton. Hi, Kristen. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd just like to make a comment about the cigarette tax versus the casino. And it seems to me that both of these incomes are related to social ills. They're both related to addiction. One of them, the gambling casino income, will promote the social ill. I understand that we're saying, why do we let the rest of New England, Connecticut, and Massachusetts get more income from the social ill? But we're promoting the social ill and the costs connected with it. Whereas the cigarette tax will create a barrier to that social ill, and that's why I think that the cigarette tax is a much better way of raising income for the state.
Well, Kristen, thanks a lot for the call. And Josh Rogers, we were talking about this before. It isn't a one for the other, though. I mean, the cigarette tax increase would raise a lot less money than this $80 million in license fees from a casino,
well,
correct?
I mean, well, in terms of this budget, yes, but then also, you know, you'd have the ongoing income from the casino once it existed. But, you know, Kristen makes a reasonable point, and Governor Hassan, you know, is making a somewhat circular argument, and then she says, well, you know, we have these social ills already. We already have gambling in the state, you know, charity gaming, sweepstakes. We have people who go down to Foxwoods. We have the social ills now. We don't have the means to address them. If we have more gambling, we can earmark some of the proceeds from that to deal with the costs. So, I mean, she is saying we need more of it so we can raise the money to deal with the fallout from it. And, you know, maybe you find that compelling. Maybe you don't. Certainly some people criticize that argument. But that's where the governor stands.
Well, and Kristen, I appreciate your call. And Dean, you know, we've gotten calls on this before. We've talked about this a lot on The Exchange. And for some people, I'm guessing, like Kristen, gambling is not a financial issue. It's a moral issue first.
Right. I mean, this is the heart of the matter. We've been having this discussion in New Hampshire for as long as I can remember, and both sides have their studies and their arguments, and it really is kind of sort of a your sort of personal kind of moral sense about whether or not this is an acceptable trade-off. I mean, there is kind of a financial cost-benefit analysis to it that you have to do if you're going to think about using the revenue, but certainly both sides have been tremendously passionate, and I've lived in a number of cities and states around the country where gambling has been under discussion. It's the same exact discussion everywhere I go. The sorts of, you know, the two sides are clearly defined. They have their data about the negative moral or positive impacts and economic impacts. It's a very passionate issue.
I mean, one thing that Governor Hassan, she said when she was actually on this show, is she talked about New Hampshire's tradition of gambling, and that this was, I think she used the term, the next generation in New Hampshire's long embrace of gambling. And you look back to, you know, we had some of the first sweepstakes races for horses. We
the first lottery state, and so,
you know, that's a new argument she's making to pitch that. I mean, we're also a state that has a long tradition of trying to sell as much liquor as possible. And so this is, you know, the state has been comfortable relying on, you know, sort of so-called sin revenue for a long time.
Well, Kristen, I appreciate your call. Thank you for joining us. I want to remind everybody that our March Fund Drive is underway, and your contributions help keep this program, The Exchange, on the air. Please help us meet this hour's goal, $2,800 to raise in the next 10 minutes. So give by 10 a.m., by the way, and you'll also get two chances to win an iPad. Pledge at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477. And thanks. And gentlemen, in just the couple minutes that we have left, I did want to hit two other stories if we could. And Dean, to you, some political activity around the governor's budget, not just whether we should raise this tax or that tax, but Jennifer Horn, the new chair of the State Republican Committee, had some sharp words for the governor, not just on content of the budget, but also on an administrative matter. What was that all about?
Right. And it felt like we were back in the middle of the 2012 election cycle for a moment, given all the hot rhetoric on both sides. Well, the issue is that when the governor is required to present her budget by February 15th, she also has to include House Bill 2, which is an accompanying document that makes the relevant changes to the law, so that you can actually put the budget in place. And she was late. I think she just turned it in a few days ago. That HB 2 was about 19 days late, I think. The reality is 9 out of the last 10 HB 2s have been late, and two of them, going back to the 90s, were submitted in late March. So this is kind of a common sort of administrative loophole. People tend to delay submitting this budget document, and Jennifer Horn, you know, accused her of breaking the law and encouraged the attorney general to investigate, et cetera, et cetera. Very, very hot rhetoric. I mean, it's a moot point now because she's turned it in, but it is interesting because you know, I've talked to Democrats and Republicans about this around the state, and everybody was kind of amused. It was a little bit like hitting a thumbtack with a sledgehammer. You know, she made her point. You know, I think the rhetoric was, you know, sort of hot and out of proportion for the administrative nature of the administrative oversight, but it just goes to show you that that in some respects Republicans are still fighting the last election, but also that they're going to hold the governor accountable. They're going to be watching her through a magnifying glass or a microscope, and so Governor Hassan's going to have to be aware of sort of the political aspects of this as she moves forward with her budget.
Well, and one more story that got a lot of play, not just here in New Hampshire, but nationally. Josh Rogers has to do with the Voting Rights Act of 1965. New Hampshire has, as the headline says, been bailed out from this Voting Rights Act. What's happening?
Well, a three-judge panel in D.C. Said that New Hampshire no longer has to comply with the requirements of Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. This was the section that was under discussion at this U.S. Supreme Court last week. Basically, New Hampshire was sort of larded into the states under scrutiny under that because in 1968, in 8 towns and 2 incorporated areas of the state, the largest town affected being Newington, turnout was less than 50% in that year's presidential election, and New Hampshire at the time had a literacy requirement to vote on the books. People say that it wasn't used, but it was there. So for that reason,
it triggered it.
And one thing that was interesting is that you know, in triggering that, New Hampshire was supposed to submit every change to election law affecting these two unincorporated areas and 8 towns, which would mean essentially every state election law statute, to the federal government for clearance. For about 20 years, the state didn't submit any of them. The Help America, and with no pushback from the federal government, the Help America Vote Act of 2002 came along. The state was encouraged to catch up if it wanted to qualify for federal funds. There was also the argument that not being caught up might put the presidential primary at risk. There was a lot of scrutiny of whether New Hampshire was diverse enough among some Democratic activists at the time to keep the primary. The upshot is that New Hampshire did catch up. 233 changes were submitted, and
a lot.
And but then New Hampshire was again, people who were critical of the Voting Rights Act period and were challenging it said that allowing states like New Hampshire to get out when they hadn't, properly complied in the past, they thought that it weakened their argument that the Voting Rights Act had to be thrown out in its entirety, which was the argument before the Supreme Court. So a group tried to intervene. The three-judge panel in D.C. blocked it. And New Hampshire is now free and clear. The funny thing is that the average voter in New Hampshire had no idea that we were part of it in the first place.
Well, very quickly, I want to close out with recognition that New Hampshire, and especially the city of Manchester this week, lost a well-known entrepreneur and philanthropist, Meg Gruber. I spent many hours interviewing Meg Gruber a couple of years back for a family history project. She was funny and sharp and down to earth. She did some terrific things for the city of Manchester, including founding the Manchester Community Music School and making major donations to the Currier Gallery of Art. So I just want to recognize the passing of Meg Gruber this week. And I want to thank all of you gentlemen very much for being with us this morning.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. Checking in real quickly now with our March Fun Drive.
And hearing The Exchange is one of the reasons you value NHPR. Help us keep The Exchange coming your way by giving to NHPR now during the March Fund Drive. You can do that online at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477. Good morning. I'm Sarah Ashworth. Along with me is Rebecca Lavoie.
You really should give us a call right now. There are just 4 minutes left to get in on two drawings for two iPads that we're giving away. When you make your contribution by 10 a.m., you are entered into two drawings for two iPads. These are 16-gig Wi-Fi models, so support The Exchange. Support NHPR, and do not miss this chance to get in on two drawings. 1-888-805-6477.
Okay, we have $1,200 to raise in the next 4 minutes to stay on track this hour by calling 1-888-805-6477 right now. You help us pay for The Exchange and the upcoming Diane Rehm Show. Online contributions count towards the goal as well on nhpr.org. It's easy. We can do this. $1,200 in the next 4 minutes. Give us a call now.
Get this. It's now $900 in the next 3 minutes. Join your friends and neighbors. Join John from Milford. Join Lisa from Nashua. She says she gave because she listens. And get this. Bruce from Bedford says he gave because everyone should. Listen to Bruce. You should give. So please do. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And we have just $800 to raise in the next 3 minutes. Here's one more reason to give right now. When you make your contribution in the next 2.5 minutes before 10 o'clock, you will be entered in for two chances to win an iPad. We have two 16-gig Wi-Fi models ready to give away. Make your NHPR contribution in the next couple of minutes here, and you will be entered in both drawings. If you wait after 10 o'clock, you will be only entered in one drawing. So now is the time to do it. Hop on to nhpr.org to make your contribution.
We have just $600 left to raise in the next 2 minutes. Help us get there with your $75 gift. When you do, you will get an incredibly snazzy new thank you gift. It's a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and NHPR coffee mug. It's one of those white porcelain paper cup mugs that looks like a paper cup from your favorite coffee shop, but guess what? It's not. It's a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, an NHPR mug. What could be better than that? It can be yours for $75. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And we've heard from Anne in Concord, who says she loves Laura Kanoi in The Exchange and especially loves the book programs. Rick in Manchester made a pledge and said he loves the news programs and Laura Kanoi's program. We've got another Exchange fan calling in to make a pledge. Join Jill in Campton as she made a pledge today to help support the exchange. And Pia in Concord called and just said she just loves it. She listens all the time. If you feel that way, make your pledge. Join your friends and neighbors. Help us get to our goal and be entered for a drawing for those iPads. You can go online to nhpr.org.
Or 1-888-805-6477.